You are on tour. You're coming to Wakefield this Thursday, the 19th of October. It sounds like it's a hectic lifestyle being out on the road. How are you enjoying things at the moment?
I really love being on the road. You don't have to think about anything remotely dull, like paying bills and doing the washing up. You don't have to think about anything really other than just getting ready for the shows.
I guess so then. Would you like to just spend all the life on the road then? No bills, no washing up?
I would tour 10 months of the year if I could, but unfortunately I only tour about 1 month of the year.
You are coming to Wakefield this Thursday. Have you ever been to the city before?
I don't think I have.
Oh, it's a wonderful place. It's my hometown. There's plenty of things to do there. We've got a world-renowned art gallery, plenty of charity shops, lots of coffee shops as well, and lots of great people. So I'm sure you will enjoy your time.
It sounds right
up
my strata.
Well, it's a bit like Glasgow, but smaller, I would say.
Quite a lot smaller.
As we always say, much to our own chagrin, we're just south of Leeds.
Right. Okay. I thought it was Yorkshire, but I'm not sure. Yes. Looking forward to it.
This is to promote your fourth album. Now, this is My Kingdom. Now, how's the tour been going so far?
Yeah, really well. It's been getting better every night, which is a good sign. Or we've been getting better every night. So we started off in Manchester, Glasgow, Edinburgh, and we did Newcastle last night.
Are you enjoying getting further south, further away from home? Is that a bit of a tear on the heart for you? I know it says you live and breathe Glasgow.
No, I mean, I'm quite happy to spend as much time away from Glasgow as possible. I've been marooned there for years. Glasgow, it's a brilliant city. It's a great place to come back to, but it's also a great place to get away from.
From what I've read and from your own website and your social media, you have an image which is, I guess, very unlike the usual musician who paints everything as rosy and everything's great. You're very open and honest about your life and the world you live in.
I wouldn't say I'm honest.
Have I fallen for the trap? Is that what I've done?
It's just all about the kind of the songs you write. I mean, everything you do, whether you're writing a blog or writing a lot of nonsense on Twitter, it's just all part of the artifice of trying to get people to come to your gigs or listen to your records, really. It's not actually you. You're the person that you are with your friends and your mates in the pub. That's not the person, I don't want to expose that person to that.
Do you enjoy playing that role then, I guess, as Justin Curry the frontman?
Well, not really, but you've got to do something to try and promote yourself in the modern era where everybody has their own cottage industry, which I've never really enjoyed doing. But you've got to do something, because otherwise you just completely disappear. So you have to put some kind of a mask on to try and keep people. And I'm not very good at it, and that's why. that's why I'm playing small gigs and not. I don't have millions of followers on social media.
Well, I guess then, with the way the world is, like, are you glad you came into the music world in the 80s, where things were obviously much different with no social media, no Twitter or whatever?
We had it really easy, and there was a huge amount of cash floating around in the recording industry in the 80s and 90s. It was not particularly difficult to get record deals for anybody in places like Glasgow, and those record deals entailed having quite a lot of money thrown at you. So we got to learn how to do things, how to make videos and do album covers, record records, and these things are all really well funded, and that's not the case now. People, bands now have to just get their mates to do everything for them, or have to beg to get things done for nothing. So we were really, really lucky, all those bands in the 60s and 70s got mercilessly ripped off by their management companies and their record companies. By the time the 80s came around, there was a kind of infrastructure of lawyers in the in the music industry who actually looked after the artists. So we never really got shafted in the way that those artists did in the 60s and 70s. And there was lots of, you know, there was lots of cash swirling around to be thrown at bands to do what they love doing, which is basically going into recording studios from time to time. So I'm eternally grateful that that was our era.
I guess timing is everything. You left, or you went on your own in 2003, and it took you 5 years to release your first album. Was there any particular reason for that? Or did it just took that long?
It took me 5 years to find a deal for it, because it was I wanted to make something significantly different from what Delamici had done. So I found it was just very hard to find an indie label or a major label that would have anything to do with it. So it took me about 4 years to find a label.
And obviously, this is your fourth album. Are you on tour with your band, The Pallbearers? Is it like being back in the old days, having a band behind you as well?
Sure. I mean, it's quite a different dynamic being a solo artist. I mean, there's no democracy. It's, you know, everything's sort of down to you. You don't have any sort of consigliere or sort of second in command. You're it, which is, you know, in some ways I quite like, and other ways I kind of miss the, you know, having the input from other guys in the band. But no, it's very different. Being a solo guy with a band is totally different from being in a band. They're chalk and cheese, I reckon.
Which one do you prefer then? Which one do you prefer to do now?
I like them both. I mean, I like the autonomy of being the so-called solo artist, and but I really like the camaraderie and the kind of gang mentality of being in a band. You get a bit of that touring, you know, with a solo band. I mean, but it's quite the same.
As I say, you're on your fourth album now. This is My Kingdom Now. For those who haven't heard your sound post Delamici, how would you best describe it?
Well, it's still me singing, so I suppose in that respect it doesn't sound massively different. But it's a lot less jangly, and it's a lot less frenetic and colourful. It's a bit more monochrome.
Is that? I guess going back to the real you, is that how you write things? You're more, I don't know, black and white, as you say.
Well, towards the end of Delamici, I was writing a lot of things that I didn't even think would have made the Delamici B-sides. Things that were quite slow. I didn't necessarily have choruses. And that was really why I ended up making records under my own name, because they didn't sound like Delamici records. And I very rarely write songs that sound like Delamici songs now. But then again, that might, excuse me, I might all be in the eye of the beholder. I really don't know. I mean, if I'd taken all these solo songs to a band like Delamici, would they have ended up being Delamici songs? I honestly don't know. That's a bit of a conundrum. But I feel like what I write now is not Delamici material, but who knows?
We're a radio station that covers a lot of sports, so I need to ask you about Don't Come Home Too Soon, which I did a 2-hour retrospective on football songs last year, if you can believe we can actually do a thing for 2 hours.
Oh, God, you can do a week of football songs.
There's obviously been some dreadful ones out there, some very banging the drum, we're going to win the World Cup kind of thing. And Don't Come Home Too Soon was the complete antithesis of that, but I really liked it, but obviously not a lot of, well, some people were very anti the fact that you were, you know, not going in there and saying, we're going to win the World Cup.
Yeah, when there's two, when this kind of Scottish national team support, there's kind of two strands. There's people like me and most of my mates who know that Scotland are kind of minnows in an enormous ocean of talent and will probably never have qualified for a major competition again. And then there's a kind of town army element who are very jingoistic and think that, you know, we're absolutely brilliant and you can't say anything negative about Scotland ever. So they're kind of diametrically opposed, those two things. But I mean, the kind of inspiration for that song came from listening to Three Lines on a Shirt, which I thought was a brilliant football song. And as soon as I heard that, I thought, well, first thing I thought was that's going to go to number one, which it did. And the second thing I thought was, that's the first time I've heard anybody from the kind of English team side expressing kind of sentiments of regret and mournfulness. And I just thought it fitted really well. And you're right, I think at the end of the day, I think that song actually helped the team in Euro 96. So that was where the idea came from. I thought, well, look, if, you know, if they can get away with it, I don't see why I can't get away with it. But that being said, I didn't write it to be a football song. I wrote it about the Scotland team, but I also wrote it for the American audience that we were playing to a lot then, because I knew the American audience would interpret that song as being about a European family sending a family member over to America to make their fortune. So it had that double meaning, but it was only when the powers that be discovered that it was originally written about the Scotland national football team that they got the applause on it and made a big sort of song dance out of it, which was probably a bit of a mistake in retrospect.
I guess you could never have written a Where on the March with Ali's Army kind of song, could you?
Yeah, I mean, I actually like that particular song, and I like I Have a Dream. I think that's a great one. That's tinged with sadness. I mean, for me, it was just, I mean, I really like that song, but for me, it was a mistake hitching anything that Delamici did to this kind of slightly nationalist project. And I mean, there were just all sorts of weird people that kind of got involved. And then your music gets judged not on its merits, but it gets judged on its ability to, light flames of enthusiasm amongst, you know, football supporters, which is just not what I was trying to do at all. I mean, what I was trying to do was write a love song to a football team. You know, I mean, I wrote it literally the night after I saw us qualify for the World Cup. Beating San Marino. It took us about 60 minutes to score a goal against San Marino. It was pretty nerve-wracking.
And sadly, of course, you are the last person to write a song for Scotland going to a major competition. So.
I know, and I was for completely selfish reasons, I was desperately hoping that we'd qualify for the France Euros. Because then I thought, well, the lyrics will still work. Because the lyrics mentioned France. But yeah, I kind of thought this time might have been our time. I mean, we will qualify eventually. You know, we've got a lot of really great up-and-coming young players. Apparently there's a whole glut of like 16 to 18 year olds at the moment that are looking really promising. So I mean, we will eventually qualify, but wasn't to be this time.
You're not expecting a call from the SFA next time then?
No, I mean, there never was a call from the SFA. I mean, that's the thing. You know, the song was written, you know, wasn't really meant to have anything to do with the official side of the Scotland team. And in fact, the SFA had bugger all to do with it. The SFA farmed it all out to a private enterprise called Team Scotland or something, it was some PR firm down south that were just absolutely useless. And they completely buggered up all the ticket allocations. So the record company had run all this... all these competitions. So we had 12 competition winners going to the opening game against Brazil in Paris, and the organisation that was supposed to be doing all this was the Team Scotland organisation, or whatever they were called, just didn't have any tickets. So the record company had to buy 12 tickets from touts in Paris on the eve of the game, which cost €2,000 a ticket. So they had to send their accountant over with a suitcase full of cash from London, chained to this briefcase, I should say, to go around the bars of Paris and they bought to buy these tickets. So some of these competition winners were 8 years old. And they had all these tickets with French people's names on them, which is absolutely hilarious. So the whole thing was an absolute farce, you know. And again, as I said, it was not to do with the SFA, it was all farmed out to some PR company.
Oh, it's a great story from, as I say, one of my favourite, and I guess not football records. It just seems to have been attached to football in the end. The other thing I should say thank you for on behalf of all radio broadcasters is if we've ever got a gap we need to fill, Roll to Me is the perfect song for that. So thank you very much for writing
well,
that.
Well, that's why it was a radio hit in America for 20 years. Because they could play it before the news.
It's exactly not obviously. We think it's a great record, but it also fills that 2 minute gap. You're right. It's a perfect song.
Yeah, it's
for
weird.
That.
I mean, that was just an accident of the fact the song is incredibly fast. It's like 142 BPM or something. So you know at that speed you get all your choruses in the allotted time. And it was kind of a Beatles pastiche as well. But yeah, in retrospect, that actually served us really well because American DJs absolutely loved playing it because it was so short.
Well, I'm glad we're ending on a high note now, and you are in Wakefield with the Pallbearers on Thursday, this Thursday, the 19th of October at Warehouse 23. If people want to get tickets, you can find them online at Warehouse 23's website. And the show on Thursday, we wish you the best of luck with it, and hopefully you enjoy your time in Wakefield and take away some great memories. I'm looking forward to reading about them on your website.
I'll be taking away some tarts from your charity shops for the kinds of things we're
struggling. Well, we have loads of them because that's all we've got left in the city process.
Yeah, that's quite depressing, but I'll take advantage of this.
Well, I'm glad, and thank you very much for taking the time out today to speak to us, Justin.
My pleasure. Thanks for speaking to me.